Then, by the power of effort, the fifth power, as soon as a desirous attitude, scattering, laxity, lethargy, or the like is produced, in even subtle form, one does not assent to it, but abandons it with exertion. At this point, the seventh mental abiding, called thorough pacifying, arises. During the five periods of the third through the seventh mental states, even if the stability of meditative stabilization predominates, it is interrupted by laxity and excitement. Hence, these are states of interrupted engagement. Then, through the power of effort and mindfulness, discordant factors such as laxity and excitement are unable to interrupt meditative stabilization, which, therefore, is produced continuously. At this point, the eighth mental abiding called making one pointed arises. Now, at this time, if one continuously exerts oneself, laxity and excitement are unable to interrupt meditative stabilization, which one is thus able to sustain for a long period. Hence, this is an occasion of uninterrupted mental engagement. Then gradually, due to having meditated a great deal, through the sixth power of thorough familiarity, the exertion of implementing mindfulness and introspection are no longer needed, and the mind engages the object of observation of its own accord. At this point, the ninth mental abiding, setting in equipoise, arises. At this time, after the mind has been set once in meditative equipoise through the mindfulness that directs the mind to the object of observation, meditative stabilization is sustained uninterruptedly for a long time through its own force, without needing to rely on mindfulness. Hence, this is an occasion of exertionless mental engagement. For example, if one is thoroughly accustomed to reciting a text, when, upon having the motivation to recite it, one recites the text anew, the recitation proceeds without interruption and without exertion, even though, in between, the mind becomes distracted. This ninth mental abiding, in which the mind becomes entirely and effortlessly absorbed in meditative stabilization, is a similitude of calm abiding. Through the gradual increase of the slight factor of pliancy that existed earlier, the assumption of bad states preventing the mind from being used in the service of whatever virtue one wishes is pacified, and mental pliancy is produced. Through its power, one separates from the assumption of bad physical states, whereupon a physical pliancy having the nature of a very pleasant physical object of touch is generated. At that time, physically, there is a great experience of bliss, and, in dependence on that, a high degree of joy and bliss arises in the mind as well. When the buoyant mental joy of this time gradually lessens, one achieves an immovable pliancy, concordant with meditative stabilization, in which the mind abides steadily on its object of observation. Simultaneously, one achieves calm abiding, which is included in the preparations for the first concentration. The concentrations and formless absorptions. Having achieved a fully qualified calm abiding in this way, one gradually cultivates awareness, such that from among the three realms and nine levels, one separates from attachment to the lower level, and thereupon attains an actual meditative absorption of the higher level. The three realms are the desire realm, form realm, and formless realm. The nine levels are those of the desire realm, the first concentration, the second concentration, the third concentration, the fourth concentration, limitless space, limitless consciousness, nothingness, and peak of cyclic existence. In dependence upon cultivating such causal meditative absorptions, birth as a god of the form or formless realms results. The seven mental contemplations. Concerning how initially to cultivate the concentrations that are causal meditative absorptions, the Master Asanga's Compendium of Knowledge says, one enters into absorption in the first concentration through the seven mental contemplations. What are the seven mental contemplations? They are the mental contemplations of individual knowledge of the character arisen from belief, thorough isolation, withdrawal or joy, analysis, final training, and the fruit of final training. Mental contemplation of individual knowledge of the character is rough investigation and fine analysis by combining hearing and thinking of the lower level, the desire realm, as disadvantageous, and the upper level, the first concentration, as advantageous. Mental contemplation arisen from belief is the generation of that contemplation into an entity arisen from meditation. Mental contemplation produced from thorough isolation is isolation from, or abandonment of, the three cycles of big manifest afflictions of the desire realm. The nine cycles of afflictions of the desire realm are three cycles of big afflictions, which include big of the big, middling of the big, and small of the big. Three cycles of middling afflictions, which include big of the middling, middling of the middling, and small of the middling. And three cycles of small afflictions, which include big of the small, middling of the small, and small of the small. The fourth, mental contemplation of withdrawal or joy, is the further abandonment of the three cycles of middling manifest afflictions of the desire realm. The fifth, mental contemplation of analysis, is investigation and analysis as to whether one's mind is polluted by the three cycles of afflictions of the desire realm. The sixth, mental contemplation of final training, is the further abandonment, in dependence upon such analysis, of the three cycles of small manifest afflictions, the most subtle of the desire realm, through the power of the antidote. Through these six mental contemplations, an actual first concentration, mental contemplation that is the fruit of final training, is achieved. These mental contemplations, which have the aspect of grossness and peace, in that they view the lower level as faulty and gross, and the upper level as faultless and peaceful, are clear realizations or path consciousnesses that are common to the mundane and supramundane paths. The four concentrations. A natural first concentration has five branches. The two antidotal branches of investigation and analysis, the two benefit branches of joy and bliss, and the basis branch of mental one-pointedness. A first concentration that possesses both investigation and analysis is posited as a mere actual first concentration, and one that is without investigation but has analysis is posited as a special actual first concentration. When one separates from desire for the first concentration through the preparations for the second concentration, such as the mental contemplation of the individual knowledge that the character of the first concentration is faulty, and that the second concentration is faultless and advantageous, one attains the second concentration. An actual second concentration has four branches. The antidotal branch is internal clarity. The benefit branches are the joy and bliss produced from meditative stabilization. And the basis branch is meditative stabilization. Here, internal clarity refers to the three, mindfulness, introspection, and equanimity, of the respective level. Since internal investigation has been completely abandoned, these three collectively are called internal clarity. When one separates from desire for the second concentration, in dependence on the preparations that, by way of the six mental contemplations, analyze the second concentration to be faulty and the third concentration to be advantageous, one attains an actual third concentration. An actual third concentration possesses five branches. The three antidotal branches of mindfulness, introspection, and equanimity, the benefit branch of bliss, which is such that joy has been abandoned, and the basis branch of meditative stabilization. When one separates from desire for the third concentration in dependence on the preparations that, by way of the six mental contemplations, analyze the third concentration to be faulty and the fourth concentration to be advantageous, one attains an actual fourth concentration. The fourth concentration possesses four branches. The two antidotal branches of pure mindfulness and pure equanimity, the benefit branch of the feeling of equanimity, and the basis branch of meditative stabilization. Here, mindfulness is said to be pure in that it is completely purified of the eight faults of concentration. Fire-like investigation and analysis relative to the first concentration, feelings of pleasure and pain accompanying the sense consciousness relative to the second concentration, mental pleasure and displeasure accompanying the mental consciousness relative to the third concentration, and inhalation and exhalation of the breath relative to the fourth concentration. These branches of the concentrations are 18 from the viewpoint of name and 11 from the viewpoint of substantial entity. Vasubandhu's Treasury of Knowledge says, the first has five, investigation, analysis, joy, bliss, and meditative stabilization. The second has four branches, clarity, joy, and so forth. The third has five, equanimity, mindfulness, introspection, bliss, and abiding. The last has four, mindfulness, equanimity, neither pleasure nor pain, and meditative stabilization. In substantial entity, there are said to be 11. With respect to the concentrations into which one is born as a result of those concentrative absorptions, from having cultivated the small, middling, and great levels of an actual first concentration, one is born in the three abodes of the first concentration, the Brahma type, and so forth. The same goes for the second and third concentrations, and from having cultivated the small, middling, and great levels of an actual fourth concentration, one is born in the abodes of the fourth concentration, the cloudless, and so forth. From completing the small, middling, and great levels of the respective actual concentrations, the fruitional effects and so forth of that cultivation are experienced in those abodes. The appearance and form that is produced in the respective abodes is fruitional effect. The mind of absorption is a causally concordant effect, and the appearance of the resources of the area is an owned effect. The four formless absorptions. Limitless space, limitless consciousness, nothingness, and the peak of cyclic existence are the four possible formless meditative absorptions. When the fourth concentration has been attained without deterioration, the sense of touch, sight, and appearance to the mental consciousness cease with respect to form, and one meditates that all phenomena are limitless like space. The completion of that meditation is the meditative absorption of limitless space. Then, beyond this, one meditates that just as space was limitless, so consciousness is limitless. The completion of this is the meditative absorption of limitless consciousness. Then, upon seeing that even both of these involve coarse discriminative situations, one meditates thinking that there is no object of apprehension whatsoever. The completion of this is the meditative absorption of nothingness. Seeing that even all three of these involve coarse discriminative situations, one meditates, thinking, coarse discrimination does not exist, and subtle discrimination is not non-existent. The completion of this is the meditative absorption of neither discrimination nor non-discrimination, or the meditative absorption of the peak of cyclic existence. Regarding the effects of these formless absorptions, although the formless realm does not have different places distinguished by way of coarse form, differences do occur by way of superiority and inferiority, length of life, high and low, and so forth. These effects of pleasure in such high status within cyclic existence are more and more sublime in terms of increasingly vast and more stable meditative stabilization, length of lifespan, and so forth. The need for the concentrations and absorptions. In dependence upon the four actual concentrations, one can attain the four immeasurables of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity, as well as the five mundane clairvoyances of the divine eye, the divine ear, knowledge of others' minds, memory of former lives, and knowledge of transmigration and rebirth. These are specific qualities of the meditative absorptions of the two upper realms, the form and formless realms. Even those who have entered into the path of the three vehicles must achieve the higher features of the path upon having initially produced these meditative stabilizations and qualities. Hence, they serve as the bases of qualities such as clairvoyance. Also, specifically, the absorption of non-discrimination is attained in dependence upon the mind of an actual fourth concentration, and the absorption of cessation and so forth are attained in dependence upon the mind of an actual meditative absorption of the peak of cyclic existence. Therefore, these concentrations and formless meditative absorptions are to be sought and achieved by both non-Buddhists and Buddhists. Since they are also preliminary doctrines for those entering the stages of the teachings of the conqueror, the Buddha, one should, upon coming to know them in this way, train in their implementation. Chapter 6, Training in Special Wisdom. The third of the three special trainings is that in wisdom. Wisdom is the discrimination of phenomena through investigation and analysis. When it is fully cultivated, it becomes the perfection of wisdom, prajnaparamita. There are three types of wisdom. 1. The wisdom that realizes the ultimate. This is the wisdom that realizes the suchness of selflessness, either by way of a meaning generality, which is an internal generic image, or directly. 2. The wisdom that realizes conventionalities. This is the wisdom of skill in the five sciences, linguistics, logic and epistemology, arts, medicine, and inner sciences. 3. The wisdom that realizes how to bring about the welfare of sentient beings. This refers to knowing how to achieve the present and future welfare of sentient beings without impropriety. Among these, one must achieve the most important, the wisdom that realizes selflessness. The different Buddhist systems have a variety of assertions about how to posit the meaning of selflessness, and all of them are in the end just means for realizing the view of the middle way consequence school. Thus, let us here explain selflessness based primarily on the middle way consequence school. Chandrakirti's supplement to Nagarjuna's treatise on the middle way says, "Seeing with their mind that all afflictions and defects arise from the view of the transitory collection of mind and body, as inherently existent I and mine, yogis, upon realizing that the self is the object of this view, refute self-inherent existence." The root of all of the troubles of cyclic existence and solitary peace is the ignorance that conceives true existence, as well as its predispositions. Apart from the exalted wisdom that realizes selflessness, there is no means of eradicating that ignorance. Therefore, one must make a solid effort at extraordinary special insight, the means of realizing the meaning of selflessness. There are two selflessnesses, of persons and of phenomena. If one ascertains the selflessness of persons, it is easier to ascertain the selflessness of phenomena. Therefore, initially, one should ascertain the selflessness of persons. To ascertain the selflessness of persons, it is important to base yourself on the four essentials: the essential of ascertaining the object of negation, ascertaining the entailments of emptiness, ascertaining the lack of oneness, and ascertaining the lack of difference. The Master Shantarakshita's Ornament for the Middle Way says, "These things, propounded by ourselves and others, because they lack a reality that is, ultimately, a nature of oneness or manyness, do not inherently exist, like a reflection." To research the meaning of selflessness, it is very important to identify the object of negation. The Master Shantideva's Engaging in the Bodhisattva Deeds says, "Without contacting the imagined existent, its non-existence is not apprehended." The object of negation is what is conceived by an awareness that conceives true existence. If one identifies only a coarse object of negation and not the subtle one, one will refute only that coarser one and will be incapable of damaging the conception of true existence because there will still be a remainder of the object of negation. Consequently, one will fall to the extreme of superimposing true existence onto phenomena. If, by taking the object of negation too broadly, one holds everything that appears as an object of the six collections of consciousness, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mental consciousness, to be the object of negation, then one will fall to the extreme of denying the presentation of conventionalities, whereby the danger of the extreme of annihilation is extremely great. Through careful analysis of the way in which the I is conceived to be inherently established by the innate misconception of I as inherently existent, one determines that the I appears to be established as able to stand by itself, to be self-instituting. It stands without depending on the collection of the mental and physical aggregates, which are its basis of designation, or without depending on any of them individually, even though the I appears without those aggregates. This is how a consciousness that innately misconceives the I as inherently existent operates. Unmistaken identification of this is the first essential of ascertaining the object of negation. Ascertaining the entailment of emptiness. If the I is inherently established, it must be established as either the same entity as, or a different entity from, the mental and physical aggregates. The decision whereby there is no other way, except for these two possibilities, in which it could be established, is the second essential. This is the essential of ascertaining the entailment that whatever is not established as either the same entity as, or a different entity from, its basis of designation, is necessarily empty of inherent existence. Ascertaining the lack of identity. If the two, the self and the aggregates, are one entity that is truly or inherently established, they must be an utterly indivisible one. Why? A disjunction of the mode of being and the mode of appearance, such that, despite being the same entity, the phenomena appear as different conceptually isolatable factors or divisions, is a mode of falsity of conventionalities. Therefore, if something is truly established, such disjunction of its mode of appearance and its mode of being cannot occur. This is due to the fact that if there were anything truly or inherently established, the status of that object would have to appear exactly as it is to an awareness to which that truly established object appears. Hence, if the two, the self and the aggregates, are a truly established unity, there are the three faults that, one, just as even one person has many mental and physical aggregates, so there would be many persons. Two, or, just as there is no more than one person, so the aggregates also would be one. Three, just as the mental and physical aggregates are produced and disintegrate, the person also would be inherently produced and would inherently disintegrate. The realization that the self and the aggregates are not an inherently established unity, through such reasoned analysis, is the third essential of ascertaining the lack of identity. ascertaining the lack of inherently established difference. If the self and the aggregates are inherently different, it must be a difference that is capable of withstanding reasoned analysis, in which case they must be factually unrelated objects that are different in all ways, such as entity, substance, and so forth. Why? Being different from the viewpoint of isolates, that is, being different for thought but not different from the viewpoint of entity, is the status of a falsity. Therefore, such is not feasible in what is inherently established. Thus, if the self and the mental and physical aggregates are unrelatedly different, when the sickness, aging, and discarding of the aggregates occur, the self would not become sick, aged, and so forth. As a result, there would be the fault that the self would not have the character of the aggregates, such as production and disintegration. There would also be faults whereby a separate self would have to be demonstrable upon clearing away the five aggregates. Hence, the decision that the self and the mental and physical aggregates lack inherently established difference is the fourth essential of ascertaining the lack of plurality. Realizing the selflessness of the person. A consciousness that realizes the non-establishment of the self and the mental and physical aggregates, either as an inherently established identity or as inherently established different entities, is an awareness that realizes the reason, the proof establishing that which is to be proven, an absence of inherent existence. How does one realize from that proof what is being proven, that is, that the self does not inherently exist? Here is an example. Let us assume that a bull is lost, and that there are no more than two fields to which it could have gone. If someone were to search for it in the upper, lower, and middle parts of either field, merely seeing that it was not in there would be enough to tell him or her that the bull being sought was not there. Likewise, having previously identified how the object of negation, in this case, the inherently existent I, appears to a consciousness that conceives true existence, when, while keeping this object of negation deep in the mind, one analyzes it in terms of identity and difference. As soon as one realizes the second reason, the lack of difference, the object of negation established in the mind disappears. When, at that point, one concludes that such a self does not exist, one has realized the selflessness of persons and found the view of the middle way. The selflessness of phenomena. The King of Meditative Stabilizations Sutra says, just as you have known the discrimination of the self as inherently existent to be unfounded, apply this mentally to all phenomena. All phenomena are completely devoid of their own intrinsic entityness, like space. The selflessness of phenomena is similar to that explained above with respect to persons. It is illustrated with a pot, for instance. A pot is established in dependence upon the coming together of many dependent arisings of causes and conditions. There are its substantial cause, which is the aggregated collection of its many minute particles, and its cooperative conditions, such as the activity of the potter's hands. There is no pot established as self-arisen and under its own power that does not depend on any of these. Similarly, there is no phenomenon that is inherently established that is not established in dependence upon causes and conditions, its parts, and so forth. Yet, while not existing this way, phenomena appear to exist this way, and an awareness that conceives phenomena to exist in accordance with how they appear is a consciousness that conceives a self of phenomena. Having identified the mode of apprehension of such an awareness, one analyzes by way of the four essentials mentioned above, the essential of ascertaining the object of negation, and so forth. At the end of this analysis, the very object of the mode of apprehension of such an awareness destructs into a vacuity, whereupon the object appears to the mind as a mere nominally imputed existent, a mere coming together of dependent arisings. At that point, one has realized the selflessness of phenomena. Through the power of ascertaining in this way that persons and phenomena do not inherently exist, ascertainment of the validity of presentations of merely dependent imputed cause and effect, agent and object, is induced even more strongly. Also, in dependence upon ascertaining merely nominally imputed dependent arisings, ascertainment of the fact that phenomena are empty of being established from their own side arises in greater force. When such mutual reinforcement occurs, one has realized emptiness as the meaning of dependent arising, and dependent arising as the meaning of emptiness. This is the correct view, the Buddha's unsurpassed thought. Moreover, there are a very great many such methods for realizing emptiness, not just the reasoning of identity and difference just explained, but also the diamond slivers, the reasoning refuting the four extremes, the reasoning refuting the four alternatives, and the reasoning of dependent arising. When one thus ascertains unerringly the meaning of selflessness, the profound emptiness, by way of many reasonings, that understanding should be raised higher and higher through the practice of analytical and stabilizing meditations. This is the way to practice the training in special wisdom. Chapter 7. How to proceed on the great and small vehicle paths in dependence upon the three trainings. In dependence upon practicing these three special trainings, some people progress on the lesser vehicle path, achieving the excellent liberation that is the state of a hearer, a solitary realizer, or a foe destroyer. Some, proceeding on the great vehicle path, achieve the state of a Buddha. The lesser vehicle paths of hearers. There are five paths of hearers, that of accumulation, preparation, seeing, meditation, and no more learning. With respect to how these are traversed, Chandrakirti's 70 stanzas on the three refuges says, therefore, if one strives at hearing for the sake of constant virtue out of seeking liberation from cyclic existence, gradually one becomes a hearer. Cyclic existence refers to the continuum of mental and physical aggregates appropriated through contamination, in which, upon assuming a body due to contaminated actions and afflictive emotions, one powerlessly cycles through rebirths ranging from the peak of cyclic existence to the most tortuous hell. Through realizing just how one is tortured in cyclic existence by the three types of suffering, the sufferings of pain, of change, and of pervasive conditioning, one's mind turns away from that state of suffering, producing an attitude that seeks liberation from cyclic existence. When an authentic awareness that seeks liberation develops, one has entered the hearer path of accumulation. The hearer path of accumulation has three phases, small, middling, and great. On those occasions, one cultivates meditation on ugliness, the meditative stabilization of mindfulness of the inhalation and exhalation of the breath, the mindful establishments, the thorough abandonments, the legs of emanation, and so forth. Through the force of these, erroneous conceptions that what is actually suffering is pure, pleasant, permanent, and self, as well as afflictive emotions such as desire and hatred, are overwhelmed. As a result, one does not wish for the prosperity of cyclic existence, good resources and the like, and is endowed with the qualities of being inclined toward purity, liberation, and possession of the five clairvoyances, as well as the ability to use emanations and so forth as one wishes. After that, at the time of the path of preparation, Not only does one have all the types of qualities of the path of accumulation to a greater extent than before, but one also gradually attains special wisdoms arising from meditation, observing the suchness of the Four Noble Truths on the occasions of the four levels of that path: heat, peak, forbearance, and supreme mundane qualities. Through that, special clear appearances of the meaning generalities of the aspects of impermanence, misery, emptiness, selflessness, and so on arise. One also attains the five faculties and the five powers. At that point, one has such inconceivable qualities. When one passes from the level of supreme mundane qualities on the path of preparation to the path of seeing, through the power of directly seeing the suchness included within the 16 aspects of the Four Noble Truths, then one completely destroys the seeds of all 112 afflictions pertaining to the three realms, desire, form, and formless realms, to be abandoned by the path of seeing. Because one thereby attains the qualities of a superior, one becomes a member of an ultimate spiritual community, or Sangha, jewel from among the three refuges, Buddha, his doctrine, and the spiritual community. Having attained the path of seeing, one meditates for a long time on suchness, already directly realized, by way of the Eightfold Path of Superiors in order to destroy the seeds of the innate afflictions. The eight branches of the superior path, the path of definite deliverance, are 1. Correct view. 2. Correct realization. 3. Correct speech. 4. Correct aims of actions. 5. Correct livelihood. 6. Correct exertion. 7. Correct mindfulness. And 8. Correct meditative stabilization. Concerning their entities and functions, correct view means, subsequent to meditative equipoise, ascertaining the view in a positive manner, analyzing how, in meditative equipoise, the reality of the Four Noble Truths was realized in a particular way. Correct realization is to examine through signs and reasonings the profound meaning understood thus, and to establish for oneself and cause others to understand ways of characterizing how the reality of the Four Truths and the meaning of Sutra go together. Since the nature of reality devoid of dualistic elaborations is characterized through words only conventionally, correct speech is to cause others to believe the view to be pure by teaching it through explanation, disputation, and composition. It is pure speech, free from falsehood and the like. Correct aims of actions are pure physical actions such that all types of behavior are without discordance with the doctrine. Hence, they cause others to believe that ethics concordant with the doctrine are pure. Correct livelihood causes others to believe that livelihood concordant with the doctrine is pure, due to its being distinct from wrong livelihood, whereby one gains sustenance through bad deeds, and due to its being free from physical hypocrisy, verbal deception, and so forth. Correct exertion, through bringing about repeated meditation on the meaning of the reality already seen, acts as an antidote to the afflictions to be abandoned by the path of meditation. Correct mindfulness, through holding in the mind the objects of observation and subjective aspects of calm abiding and special insight without forgetfulness, acts as an antidote to the secondary affliction of forgetfulness. Correct meditative stabilization, which is the achievement of meditative stabilization without the faults of laxity, excitement, and so forth, acts as an antidote to the discordant and increases the qualities of the path. When condensed, those eight branches are included in four categories. 1. Correct view causes discernment. 2. Correct realization causes understanding. 3. Correct speech, aims of actions, and livelihood, cause others to believe, and 4. Correct effort, mindfulness, and meditative stabilization are antidotal branches. The superior Maitreya's differentiation of the middle and the extremes says, causing discernment, causing understanding, three aspects causing others to believe, and three antidotes to the discordant, the branches of the path are those 8. Through meditating in that way on the meaning of suchness that has already been realized directly on the path of seeing, one creates an actual antidote to the big afflictions to be abandoned by the path of meditation. At that point, the path of meditation is attained. There are two ways of abandoning the afflictions to be abandoned, gradual and simultaneous. Regarding gradual abandonment, one gradually engenders a progression, beginning with the small, of actual antidotes to the 81 objects of abandonment by the path of meditation, beginning with the big. The objects of abandonment range from the 9 cycles of afflictions to be abandoned by the path of meditation that are included within the desire realm and are abandoned by a mundane path of meditation, to the 9 cycles of afflictions of the peak of cyclic existence, to be abandoned by the path of meditation. At the end of gradually creating these 81 antidotes, one attains a path of release induced by the Vajra-like meditative stabilization of the path of meditation, at which point one attains the hearer path of no more learning, or the state of a hearer foe destroyer. In the case of abandoning the afflictions simultaneously, one abandons the big of the big afflictions of the 3 realms and 9 levels at the same time. Likewise, one abandons the middling of the big afflictions simultaneously, and it is the same through to the small of the small afflictions. Progressing on the path this way, one attains the state of a hearer foe destroyer. The lesser vehicle paths of solitary realizers. Chandrakirti's 70 stanzas on the 3 refuges says, wanting self-arising wisdom, those who make effort seeking the enlightenment of a solitary realizer will achieve only the enlightenment of a solitary realizer. Aside from differences in the enlightenment sought, and whether or not merit is accumulated for many eons, the 5 paths and so forth of solitary realizers are mostly similar to those of hearers. Great Vehicle Path. The Great Vehicle has 2 internal divisions, a perfection vehicle and a secret mantra vajra vehicle. The path of the first, the perfection vehicle, also has the 5 paths of accumulation and so forth, like the lesser vehicle. One attains the great vehicle path of accumulation when one creates an authentic intention to seek the state of Buddhahood, motivated by love and compassion, such that one takes upon oneself the entire burden of achieving help and happiness for all sentient beings who are tortured by suffering and bereft of happiness. One is then called a bodhisattva, a child of the conqueror of the Buddha, and a great being, mahasattva, and is worthy of worship by all worldly beings, including gods and humans. As soon as this altruistic intention to become enlightened is produced, bodhisattvas are endowed with limitless good qualities, such as purification of a great many bad deeds and infractions, and swift gathering of great waves of collections of merit. At the time of the great path of accumulation, bodhisattvas achieve clairvoyance in dependence upon an actual concentration, whereby they can go to pure lands in the 10 directions, worshipping and serving many Buddhas. As a result of attaining the meditative stabilization of the stream of doctrine, they hear limitless instructions on the profound emptiness and vast compassionate activities from those Buddhas, and put their meaning into practice. Then bodhisattvas attain a union of calm abiding and special insight by observing, by way of a meaning generality which is a general image, the emptiness, that is, the lack of true existence of all phenomena. At that point, they attain the path of preparation. The path of preparation has four levels: heat, peak, forbearance, and supreme mundane qualities. On each of those levels, the coarse dualistic appearance of true existence becomes more subtle, due to which special clear appearances of the meaning generality of emptiness gradually develop. The conception of true existence of apprehended objects and apprehending subjects decreases through the force of this. The signs of achieving peak application are: 1. Through the vast practice of method and wisdom during the day, at night, even when dreaming, bodhisattvas view all phenomena as empty of inherent existence, like a dream. 2. They never produce the attitude of the lesser vehicle, that is, they never seek only their own liberation. 3. They produce the intention to teach doctrine to sentient beings. And 4. They acquire words of truth that are able to pacify types of harm and injury, such as damage from the four elements, earth, water, fire, and wind, as well as sickness and spirits. Also, bodhisattvas of sharp faculties, who on the path of preparation achieve the signs of being irreversible from perfect enlightenment, have amazing, inexpressible qualities. Then, at the uninterrupted path of the great vehicle's path of seeing, bodhisattvas directly perceive emptiness and abandon simultaneously the 112 artificial obstructions to liberation pertaining to the three realms. Simultaneously, that path also abandons the seeds of the 108 artificial obstructions to omniscience. When such a path of seeing is attained, bodhisattvas abandon the sufferings of birth, aging, sickness, and death that are under the control of the other contaminated actions and afflictive emotions. Also, since they attain the meditative stabilization called proceeding blissfully with all phenomena, no matter what dangerous conditions they encounter, poison, weapons, fire, and so forth, there is only bliss. No suffering whatsoever occurs. Then, by means of the 10 bodhisattva grounds, ranging from that part of the first bodhisattva ground included within the path of meditation, through the 10th ground, the qualities of having destroyed the discordant class of the objects of abandonment increase, such as the gradual abandonment of the seeds of the 16 afflictions, and the 108 obstructions to omniscience to be abandoned by the path of meditation. The 10 grounds are: 1. Very joyful. 2. Stainless. 3. Luminous. 4. Radiant. 5. Difficult to overcome. 6. Manifest. 7. Gone afar. 8. Immovable. 9. Good intelligence. And 10. Clouds of doctrine. On the individual 10 grounds, bodhisattvas are endowed with qualities that are inconceivable and inexpressible, special features of thorough purification and signs for each ground. These include worshipping and serving many hundreds of thousands of hundreds of billions of Buddhas, apprehending their excellent doctrine, and ripening limitless sentient beings through the four means of gathering students. These are: giving material things, speaking pleasantly about how to gain high status within cyclic existence and the definite goodness of liberation and omniscience, causing others to practice what is helpful, and practicing what one teaches others, and so forth. Gradually progressing over the 10 grounds, bodhisattvas finally sever the continuum of the subtle obstructions to omniscience through the uninterrupted path at the end of the continuum of a being who has obstructions yet to be removed and attain Buddhahood with its limitless qualities. Chapter 8. Brief discussion of the secret mantra great vehicle. Tripitaka Kamala's lamp for the three modes says, though the aim is the same, the mantra vehicle is superior due to being for the non-obscured, having many skillful methods, non-difficulty, and being designed for those of sharp faculties. The secret mantra vajra vehicle of the great vehicle is greatly superior to the perfection vehicle. However, the Buddhahoods that are the final objects of attainment or results of this vehicle and the perfection vehicle do not differ in terms of quality or level. The difference between the two vehicles must be made in terms of the causes that are the means for attaining the effect, the state of Buddhahood. Just as the effect, the bodies of a Buddha, has two aspects, truth and form bodies, so there must be discrete causes of these. The sutra and mantra vehicles accord in holding that the wisdom that realizes emptiness and that is conjoined with the altruistic intention to become enlightened is the uncommon cause of the truth body and a cooperative condition of the form body. However, the secret mantra vajra vehicle has a vast method, deity yoga, which is an uncommon cause of the form body. The perfection vehicle lacks this. It only has the methods of engendering an altruistic intention to become enlightened, the six perfections, and so forth. Consequently, Buddhahood cannot be attained in one lifetime in dependence upon the perfection vehicle, but is attained over many lifetimes. Whereas in dependence upon the path of the mantra vehicle, a person of superior faculties can become fully enlightened in one lifetime, or even in several years. Hence, the difference in speed in the secret mantra vehicle is very great. What is the uncommon cause of a form body that is a distinctive feature of the vajra vehicle? It is the unsurpassed method of cultivating deity yoga in which one meditates on a body, abode, resources, and activities similar in aspect to those of a Buddha's form body in the effect state. The perfection vehicle lacks this vast method. Divisions of secret mantra. Within the secret mantra vehicle, there are four basic sets of tantras in accordance with the levels of disciples' faculties. The 13th chapter of the Vajrapanjara Tantra says, action tantras are for the low. Yoga without actions is for those above them. The supreme yoga is for supreme beings. Highest yoga is for those above them. Also, in each of these, there are a great many differences, such as numerous subdivisions, different entities of their paths, different enumerations, different modes of teaching in the tantra sets, different speeds on the path, and so forth. The details and subtleties of their essential points are suitable to be taught in secret to disciples who have become vessels, through having entered a mandala of the vajra vehicle, and whose minds have been ripened through initiation. However, it is not suitable that they be proclaimed in the marketplace. Thus, because of this inappropriateness, I will not elaborate on the details here. The general structure of the practice of secret mantra. A person who has experienced to some degree the wish to leave cyclic existence, as well as the altruistic intention to become enlightened, first receives initiation in a mandala of the appropriate tantra set from a fully qualified lama. Then, the practitioner keeps the pledges and vows in the proper way, and with this as his or her basis, one pointedly imagines the circle of a deity, this constituting the class of appearances. Through that practice, the form body of a Buddha is achieved. Also, through becoming skilled in the techniques of concentrating on prana, or internal winds or energies, on nadi or channels, on essential constituents and so forth, the mind enters into Mahamudra, the sphere of the great seal of clear light, devoid of dualistic elaborations. Through being absorbed in this yoga, the resultant wisdom truth body of a Buddha is achieved. Chapter 9. The Four Bodies, Qualities, and Activities of Buddhahood. In dependence upon the paths of sutra and mantra already mentioned, bodhisattvas attain the resultant four bodies of a Buddha: nature body, wisdom truth body, enjoyment body, and emanation body. The superior Maitreya's Ornament for Clear Realization says, "The nature, complete enjoyment, and likewise emanation, and truth, as well as activities, are expressed as the four aspects of Buddha bodies." Nature body. Through the Vajra-like or diamond-like meditative stabilization at the end of the continuum of the 10 grounds, bodhisattvas exhaustively abandon the obstructions to omniscience. When the path of release induced by that uninterrupted path is attained, bodhisattvas attain the nature body, which is the state of having abandoned all adventitious defilements, which are the obstructions to liberation and to omniscience. This is a factor of purity from adventitious defilements. Also, the emptiness of true existence of the mind that previously, during the ordinary state, was posited as the naturally abiding lineage providing the capacity to develop into Buddhahood becomes fully transformed. At that point, it becomes the emptiness of the omniscient mind of a Buddha. It is a factor of natural purity. The truth body, endowed with these two purities, purity from adventitious defilements and natural purity, is the nature truth body. Although it occurs only when Buddhahood is attained, it is not impermanent. It is not constructed through causes and conditions. It has a nature of permanence, that is, not changing into something of another nature. Wisdom Truth Body. A Wisdom Truth Body is the exalted omniscient wisdom that directly perceives all modes and varieties of objects of knowledge as if they were in front of oneself. When it is divided in terms of conceptual isolates, there are 21 categories of uncontaminated exalted wisdom, ranging from the 37 harmonies with enlightenment through to exalted knowledge of all aspects. These will become clear in the explanation of the mental qualities of a Buddha that will follow. The nature and wisdom truth bodies are directly perceivable only by Buddhas. Complete enjoyment body. A complete enjoyment body is achieved through training in the Pure Land on the occasion of the paths of learners. It is the form body in which a bodhisattva initially becomes fully enlightened in a special place called a heavily adorned highest Pure Land. Having 5 certainties, it is the basis of emanation of a supreme emanation body. Those 5 certainties are: 1. Definite abode. It dwells only in a heavily adorned highest Pure Land. 2. Definite body. It is clearly and fully adorned with the 32 major marks and 80 minor marks. 3. Definite retinue. It is surrounded only by bodhisattva superiors, common beings as well as hearers and solitary realizer superiors are incapable of meeting it. 4. Definite doctrine. It teaches just the doctrines of the great vehicle, and it does not set forth the doctrines of the lesser vehicle. And 5. Definite time. It dwells without displaying the aspects of birth or death until cyclic existence has been emptied. A form body that has all 5 certainties is an object within the sphere of activity of great vehicle superiors who have directly perceived the truth. Therefore, such a form body is called an enjoyment body that is enjoyed or used by great vehicle superiors.